I'm Frank Daly, and welcome to That Sounds Interesting podcast. Today I'm interviewing Marina Pacheco. It was 2 years since she was last on my podcast, and a lot has happened in that time. So welcome, Marina. I'm delighted to have you on the podcast today.
Thanks, Frank. It's great to be back.
Maybe we could start a little bit with your background. I know we covered that in the last podcast interview, but it'll just give some people some background, and then we'll get up to date of what's happened in the last couple of years.
Okay. So born and brought up in South Africa, got a degree in zoology there, and then came to Portugal for a bit, couldn't find work here, moved to England and worked in nature conservation charities over there for 22 years. And finally got a bit disillusioned with the whole charity sector. I had been writing sort of during that time as for fun, and decided it was time for, you know, that midlife crisis thing, time to do something totally different. And came back to Portugal because my parents are here and it's cheaper and there's more sunshine, and started off a career in writing.
And it's been a brilliant career, Marina.
Thank you very much.
I mean, you're totally prolific when it comes to writing. You've written so many books over the last few years. How many?
I have published 22 books since sort of changing career. I have a lot of first drafts that I haven't even published yet or looked at, that I'm slowly working through, as well as writing new stuff, because inspiration keeps hitting me, so I keep writing.
That's super. And of those 22 books, maybe you could give me some sort of category of how they're broken down.
So I have a series called The Life of Galen series. That's historical fiction, straight up historical fiction. There's no mystery. It's about two monks, so everyone seems to think it's like a murder mystery, and hopefully they're not too disappointed when they find out it isn't. That's set in the very early Middle Ages. And then I have four historical romance, a couple of contemporary romance, science fiction, and I've also dabbled in children's picture books. Oh, and a couple of collections of short stories.
Wow, that's a great spread of different types of books.
Yeah, it really is. It's been a lot of fun. I mean, I just go where the sort of creativity takes me, so I don't have a set plan of what I'm going to do next.
Are you working on multiple different books at the same time?
I have a whole load of works in progress. And then if one particularly catches my fancy and ideas keep coming, I just keep working on it. Sometimes I'll go right to the end without touching something else. Sometimes I'll hit a bit of a block in the story where I don't know what to go next, and then I'll just switch over to one of the others. So,
okay, it's very nice to be able to switch to other things to get you new inspiration, I suppose.
New inspiration, it gives you a different perspective. It sometimes helps just clear the brain from the other story that's just stuck. And it also just maintains that writing habit.
You know? Of course. And when you go back to a book that you haven't written for a while, do you reread it again to get up to speed?
Yeah, I have to, because I've got to get back into the characters' heads. So, yeah, I start from the beginning.
And I guess at that stage you probably see things that you might want to change, or maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, I always tweak, so I will land up tweaking things and some stuff will jump out like, oh, there's this total hanging plot thread that I haven't addressed at all. Or you'll suddenly get another idea that you can do in there. So something that has been a block, you suddenly see the solution when you didn't have one before. So
I agree. Being away from it for a little while certainly gives you that possibility. Now, do you do editing as you're going along, which some people do, or do you get the first draft completely in down and then start to edit after that?
I edit as I go along. I don't do a lot in terms of editing. It's kind of just tightening sentences. I tend to waffle an awful lot the first time I write, so I'll often say exactly the same thing in two different ways within the same paragraph. So it's about chopping out the repetition. I am really bad at seeing or not seeing plot holes. So once I've done that kind of sort of smoothing it out so it looks great, I send it to an editor. I don't spend a lot of time editing myself. I maybe do 2 or 3 passes on a document before I send it out to my editor.
Okay, and do you use beta readers at all?
I don't anymore, no, because, I mean, I was told to send them out to the beta reader before sending it to the editor. I have a developmental editor, and she spots so many things that the beta readers don't see. Beta readers tend to be, I find, very uncritical. They give you a few kind of, oh, you could do this slightly differently or that slightly differently. I haven't found that a lot of their comments agree with each other. Sometimes I've thought, yes, I can do that, or no, I can't, but I don't feel that it affects the story in any great way. So no, I've stopped using beta readers.
It worked fine for me. I quite enjoyed getting the comments back, but it is quite a lot to ask somebody to read 400 or 500 pages and to comment on it. It's quite an undertaking for maybe 2 or 3 people.
It really is, and I just feel that you can't really go back very much either. So like if you tweak it, then you can't send it back and go, what do you think now?
Oh no,
you
know? Yeah.
So, but yeah, I just felt that my developmental editor is really good and picks up pretty much everything that I get from the beta readers.
Well, that's so pretty good, and it's a professional. And yeah, not only that, but also your editor, I guess, is looking at the previous work you've done and looking at it in context of how it works.
Yeah, she's been my editor from day one. I haven't had another, so yeah.
Okay, that's great, actually, that you found a good editor.
No, we really gelled. I did an experiment, the first manuscript I ever sent out. I sent it out to about 7 different editors because they'll do a free 2,000 words edit. And then I saw the kind of feedback I got from all of those. And I just really clicked with what she was saying and how she was giving the feedback. So yeah, I was super lucky. I mean, and every type of editing is different. So developmental editor is mostly looking for plot gaps, inconsistencies, story flow, story pace. And that's what I find the most useful feedback.
I used line editor and who did a little bit of developmental, but mostly line editing. Yeah. So it's a kind of a different focus then, really.
Yeah. I get one of those once I'm ready to publish the book. So I have 2 editors.
Okay, that sounds a great idea, Marina, and obviously it's worked really well for you so far. Just moving on to, I know in the last 2 years, because it was 2 years since we last had a podcast interview, and you've done a lot of work in that last 2 years.
Yeah, I think I'm averaging about 4 books published a year, so yeah, that's been another 8 books since we last spoke.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And what categories of books were they?
Again, so it was the Galen books, because I'm trying to finish that series. There's 10 books in total. I've got 2 books left to go. So I published 4 Galen books, and a contemporary romance, a historical romance, and a couple of, and two short story collections, yeah.
And one thing that I've noticed a lot from your the comments that you make in the Lisbon Writers Group is that you often publish really nice images from Midjourney, I think, is it?
Yeah.
And I guess that helps you focus the story in some ways.
I mean, I know a lot of people are really upset about AI and the way it's going, but for me, Midjourney, the one I subscribe to, I'm sure all the others are just as good, has just been such a joy to have, because before then I was having to use picture library images that almost everyone uses and getting the permissions and all the rest. And then because the one story is about monks, it's so hard to find historical monk pictures and trying to have the same monk on every cover, you know, so like in different positions and poses. And now I can just get Midjourney to generate my monks in the scenery I want them in. It's great. So yeah, I've been having a lot of fun with that.
They're excellent images, I have to say. Anytime I've seen any of the stuff that you've published, it's been great.
Yeah.
And obviously it's right on the subject matter as well.
Exactly. It's bang on. And yeah, that just makes me so happy, because I was so frustrated with my covers before then.
Yeah, I used them for track when I'm publishing tracks, I use DALL-E 3 rather than Midjourney, but it's the same idea. I used to draw them myself, and now I just do the cover elements and generate them with AI. I mean, everything else is done by me, and I'm sure in your case, everything else is done by you from a writing perspective. But it's handy to be able to get good images that are associated with the writing you're doing.
Yeah, and I actually can design a cover faster than when I had to go spend like hours and hours going through picture libraries trying to find the right things. So yeah, it's improved my productivity as well.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So short stories. You've written some short stories, and you've also curated a book, or two books of short stories.
Yeah, so we've got the Living, Loving, Longing Lisbon series, which is short stories, any kind of short story with the theme of Lisbon, open to anyone, and I'll be shortly opening for volume 3. it's a lot of the authors from the Lisbon Writing Group have got short stories in that. In a way, for me, it was an exercise in how to publish other people's work, and also an experiment in marketing. I use short stories as marketing tools. So each person in that anthology has also got a little section about them and how you can get their other work, assuming they have other work. And I'm wondering and hoping whether that is just another route for people to find your work. You know, they can read through an anthology and go, oh, I like that author, and then sort of go and look at their website.
Super idea, I have to say. And also, have you written some of the stories in the books of short stories?
Yeah, so in the two anthologies, I have a story in each of those, yeah.
And since you normally write novels, how did you find writing short stories versus novels?
It's a lot of fun. It's very different. I mean, it's really nice to be able to have a beginning, a middle, and an end in a day. You know,
yeah.
Write a story that starts and finishes in a day. It is a very different discipline. Obviously, you can't have all this sort of exploring, you know, the landscape and delving deep into the characters of the people. But it is good fun. I mean, before I cracked the code for short stories, because it's definitely a different way of writing and it is a different skill, the Galen books was an attempt at a short story, and it's turned into a 10-series epic.
Well, that was tremendously successful. Well done. That was great to turn them into 10 books.
Yeah, ironically.
And what about flash fiction? Have you written any?
So I've attempted flash fiction. I enjoy it. I have some extremely short, you know, obviously it's sort of like under 1,000 words, often around 500. Some of them work out really well. I really enjoy reading other people's. I tend to be a little too verbose to really crack the flash fiction. You know.
It's a difficult one, I think, as well, because it's very condensed.
Very.
It's kind of like writing a haiku.
Yeah, the Japanese poem, yeah.
Like every single syllable counts.
Yeah.
And I guess the same in flash fiction.
Absolutely.
So moving on to audiobooks, which has been one of the things you've done a lot of in the last 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, I just got an email today for my 7th audiobook has just been completed. I thought I would try the Galen books out first, partly because it's a series and series definitely make more money. So I thought if I'm going to do any audiobook, you know, a series is a good one to start with. And also because Galen Book One, all the Galen books are really short. So I thought in terms of saving money, having thinking of only doing one, it would have been, it was a cheap experiment, or cheaper, because audiobooks are not cheap.
There's quite a lot of work involved for the person who's doing the performance.
Yeah.
So you've got the author and then you have the performer as well.
Yeah.
So when you're buying an audiobook, people sometimes say, oh, very expensive. But you're paying for two things.
You're paying for a lot more than two things, actually, because even my narrator has an editor. So he does the whole narration and then he sends it to someone else to kind of, in a way, proof listen and then he does all the edits. So it is quite a job.
Wow, I didn't realise that actually.
No, neither did I, till one day he said, oh, you know, this book might be a bit delayed because my editor is away. I'm like, oh, you have an editor too, okay. So, yeah. And it's apparently about 5 hours of recording for every hour of audiobook.
Okay, that's quite a lot of time.
It is a lot of time.
And I heard it's quite stressful for people actually recording stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to do it and I just did not have the patience. I mean, aside from the acting skills, which I don't know. But I couldn't do it. Because, I mean, the editing afterwards is, you know, it's just so time consuming. You've got to just be so focused to pick up all the mistakes and, you know, remove breathiness and all of that kind of thing. It can be, yeah, it's quite a job.
And one important thing, because I listen to audiobooks and I'll always have a listen to a little piece of the book before I buy one, because some people, you can't listen to them for 10 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I auditioned, I used Findaway Voices. At that time, I'm not sure if they still do it now because they've been bought out by Spotify and it's all new stuff, but you could listen to samples of people's voices and then ask them to audition your piece of work. And it's really important to get them to do male voices and female voices within the audition, because some people do absolutely awful sort of Monty Python-esque style women, you know, in the narration, and it's just appalling.
Yeah.
So yeah, you've got to make sure that your narrator can do both.
Which is a challenge, I think.
Oh yeah, it's hugely.
So you did one book and then you did a few audiobooks.
Yeah, so once the first Galen book was done, I was very happy with how it turned out. And I thought, well, I've sold my house, I've got some money. I mean, it is the kind of thing where you do need quite, you know, it's about 2,000-3,000 euros per book, so to have it narrated. So I thought, all right, I'm going to invest in this. It is an investment for me. But the useful thing is I use Findaway Voices to distribute, and they also distribute to libraries. And I'm making some good money from the library distribution. I get more money from the libraries than the straight audiobook sales.
Okay, and libraries have an app called Libby, I think.
They've got multiple apps. It depends on the country and the various libraries and what they choose to use, but yeah.
Okay, so you can borrow an audiobook or you can borrow Kindle.
Yeah.
Or not maybe, or an ebook, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so, and have you any more audiobooks on the go?
So I'm going to complete the Galen series. And that those will all be narrated by the same narrator, which is great to have him for the whole series. I have played around with AI narration for everything else, because at one stage, I think it's still free, Google Play has got an AI narration. It's not quite there, but they promise to kind of keep tweaking the AI and improving it so your book can be tweaked as it goes along. I don't plan to pay a professional narrator again for quite a long time after the Galen books, until they start to really properly make money. Then I might think about it again.
Of course. And it's good having a whole series of books once somebody listens to one. I mean, I know I do this. If I find a book that I like, it's part of a series, and I often, when I'm walking, I listen to an audiobook as apart from actually reading. And if I've listened to one, I'll listen to another one from the same series. So it is very important having a series in audiobooks.
I mean, it's just the same as in the print books, right? Where you make more money out of series than you do out of standalone books. And it's the same with the audio.
And that brings us nicely on to probably a big topic, which is marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I tell everyone all the time, there are millions of books out there. There's something crazy, like over 6 million books on Amazon. So if you don't market your book, even if it's the best book in the world, how will people know? You actually do have to go out there and toot your own horn, because no one else is going to do it for you. But I also really don't like doing marketing, and I'd much rather be writing. So I'll often write instead of doing marketing. So I've been trying to hone the marketing I do to get the most bang for my buck in the least amount of time. And the way that the best thing for me has been my newsletter. I've built up quite a nice big following. It's nearly 12,000 people now.
Wow, that's excellent.
Yeah, I'm really pleased with that. A lot of those come from an organization called Voracious Readers Only. They will help new authors by distributing your book, one of your books, for free to people who will write reviews, but then with the proviso also that they will land up on your mailing list. And I get about just over 200 new subscribers a month through the Voracious Readers Only.
Wow, I never heard of them until you mentioned it earlier on.
Yeah, no, they're great. They're really helpful. They do a little trial thing. I mean, it costs you money, but it costs you money if you're trying to do it through Facebook or whatever else as well. So.
And the difference is you have, if you've got the email list, then you have the actual people that you can connect to,
exactly,
rather than the social media company having it.
Exactly, because you know the social media company could go bust, or they could change their terms of service or whatever, and then your entire following is just gone. So yeah, I mean the newsletter is worth its weight in gold, and I sometimes do joint giveaways as well with other writers, so that I can promote their books to my list, and you know. They promote my books to their list, and that way you can build
up. Oh, great idea, actually. Yeah. So you're expanding all the time, in that case.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I got involved in a giveaway that was just so amazing, where we got in 5,800 new subscribers in one giveaway. It practically doubled my readership in overnight.
And the fact that you have 22 books in your back catalogue means that's a lot of potential to sell.
Absolutely. And I always use the first Galen book as my giveaway so that hopefully they will then read the other Galen books.
That makes a lot of sense.
And then the other marketing I do is Amazon adverts, because people go to Amazon to buy books. So you want to advertise to people who are in the mood to buy books. And it's a lot cheaper than any of the other systems. So getting a bit more expensive, but a lot cheaper. And a lot of the adverts are kind of set and forget, you know, as long as you remember to update your end date for your things every now and then.
Oh, the campaign that you run.
The campaign, yeah. I run them on like 3-monthly loops, and I just kind of renew every 3 months.
And if you don't do advertising, sales drop off.
I get zero sales. Never mind drop off sales, I get no sales.
Yeah.
I mean, it clearly works to advertise, so. Yeah.
And what about advertising like in Audible for the audiobooks?
I haven't done it yet, but I should. I haven't set up my... you can set up exactly the same adverts that you have for your print books, just pointing them to audiobooks as well. So it's actually quite an easy thing to do. I haven't done it yet.
Okay. I know certainly Amazon, who are the big player really in this, when you're buying a book, and if you're buying the paperback or if you're buying the Kindle version, they'll offer the audiobook as well for maybe a cut down price.
Yes, and I do take part in that as well. So yeah, that is available.
Which is a good idea, because if you can get people to listening to or to consuming your books in multiple different ways, maybe you can get them to buy more as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just moving on a little bit onto the Lisbon Writers Group. Now, we mentioned this before anyway, and you're a member and so am I actually. So do you want to talk about the Lisbon Writers Group?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, they are a fabulous bunch of people. It's a pretty big group now. I think there's at least about 50 regulars. You'll have a crowd every Saturday between 8 and 20 people. We all get together and write and then share our writing, a bit of catch up. And I do think if you're an author or whatever job you do, you've got to hang out with your tribe. You've got to hang out with the people who do what you do so that you can learn from them, they can learn from you, you can cross-pollinate ideas. I don't think I would have come up with the idea of the Lisbon Anthology if I wasn't in the Lisbon Writing Group. It's nice to social, you know, to talk shop with people who know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I have to say, I look forward to the Saturday meetings.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I'm only here every 3 months, for 3 months every year, but every Saturday of those 3 months, I'm actually going to be at the meeting because it's so enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a friendly group of people. I mean, I know that some writing groups have got terrible reputations because they're a bit sort of fraught with kind of jealousies and whatever else, but I've just found the Lisbon group just super supportive.
And also the WhatsApp group that runs along with
yeah.
it. Now, I find I have to turn off notifications for this group because it's so active. So I only dip in occasionally, maybe once a day for a few minutes or possibly once every few days.
Yes, I also have it on silent because, I mean, when people get chatting, you can just be hearing like ping, 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 ping all through the day.
And there is, there's various different, because there's enough people, there's conversations going all the time.
Yeah, exactly. But I do like it because I do the daily update there as well. So I always say, you know, it's a kind of an accountability thing of like, how much have you written today or, you know, what have you achieved? And it's good for me because it means that I've got to feel like, oh, I've got to have done something so that I can say something.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I read it. I don't take part in that because I'm not always writing. I do other creative activities. But I do like to read the updates of people who and what they've been working on. It's very interesting to see
it's
the progress.
It's fascinating.
And it is good to make yourself accountable. If you're going to try and produce something, you have to do a little bit every day.
Exactly. And it is just very handy to have accountability partners. I also have a friend in Australia who's a writer. And we talk like once a week just to like, all right, what have you done? What have I done? What are we going to do next week? You know, that kind of thing. It does help.
Yes, and there's no doubt about that. So moving on a little bit, Marina, what about current book projects that you have on the go?
Okay, so aside from finishing Galen, which I am determined to do this year, I have discovered serialized stories, essentially. So there's two that I know of called, one is Webtoons, one is Tapas. And what they do is essentially they post one chapter a week. People will post one chapter a week of a story. And these can become quite epic. I'm currently reading one myself that's like over 300 chapters long.
Wow. So it's like a soap opera only in...
It's sort of in novel form. Yeah. I mean, you know, Dickens did the same.
Yeah, of course.
In his serial, you know, like weekly magazine. So it's essentially that kind of a thing.
And it made him the most successful author of his time.
Exactly. Yeah. So I thought it is a different style of writing because they seem to quite like, obviously, if you're filling up 300 chapters or whatever, but the readers seem to like a bit more of a meandering story. Where, you know, normally with the writing is like, make sure every scene, you know, pushes the story forward and, you know, you learn something from every scene and you've got to be really super efficient and kind of chugging along. Whereas this, it's kind of like, you know, they all have random scenes like say it's a romantic one, the couple goes off and has tea at a tea house and that's all they do for the whole chapter. And a bit of chat, so I guess you could argue they're getting to know each other, whatever. So I'm working on one of these long serialized stories, but I want to write the whole thing first before I upload it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I would have thought you might sort of do maybe 10 or 12 episodes and then so that you didn't have to do it every week. But you're doing the whole lot. Wow.
No, I thought I would do it all up front because I'm a bit of a girly swat or perfectionist or whatever, and I don't want to be like, oh, I've run out of ideas. How do I end this story? I want to have a nicely wrapped up story. And also because I'm a bit of a panster, I often have to go back in the story to add in like foreshadowing or, you know, or if I have a new character, I don't want him to just suddenly appear at chapter 50. You want to kind of drip them in earlier so that, you know, they're always there.
Of course, you might have only thought of it along the way, but then you can go back. So that's a very good way of going about doing it. So how many chapters are you going to write, do you think?
So I'm at about 105,000 words.
Okay,
and
wow.
I'm just past what I think will probably be halfway.
Wow, that's an epic book.
It's big. But what I thought, so I mean, the reason I'm doing it is partly as an experiment to see what I think, to see if I can get a new audience. It seems to be much younger people who read these kind of things. So in a way, it's trying to attract a new audience for me. But it's in a way also beta reading, because every chapter that gets uploaded, people are able to leave comments. And it has been fascinating for me to read other people's, you know, comments to other people's chapters and see what they like and what they don't like in each chapter.
And you could potentially change the story if you want to, even though you've written it all.
Yes.
You could add some little things in.
I could do, and I'm treating it like a beta reader, because ultimately also it will be published as a paperback book and potentially as a trilogy, just because it is so long that it might just work out better.
And is there any potential for audio in that format?
There might, well, serialized, no. Not as far as I'm aware, or not yet. There's a business idea for you, Frank.
Yes, because, you know, it would be like a radio show or a podcast that people are listening to a new chapter.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be totally refined as an audiobook, but it could still get some following.
Actually, that's a great idea. And you could, I mean, you could put a chapter up a week on, like, YouTube or I think not Patreon, the other one, gosh, I've forgotten the people who also do newsletters, Substack.
Oh yes.
They have audio, so you could potentially have an audio of the book. Because I mean, these companies that I mentioned that do the serialization, they do not try to copy, you know, or keep you just on their platform. You can do what you want; it's your work.
Of course, that's
so
great.
So whilst you're uploading, it's really important. So whilst you're uploading to theirs, you can still be uploading everywhere else too. So.
And it would be short enough to not be a long job to actually record a chapter.
Absolutely. Yeah, because their chapters are only 1,500 words per chapter, or no more than that.
Okay, so, certainly doable.
Yeah.
Okay, and finally, Marina, what about future plans? What are you planning over the next year or two?
So aside from all of this, I have discovered writers' residencies, which I had not really thought about before. I'd always been quite envious of artists and the kind of strange support they get in terms of, like, you know, subsidized accommodation and even sometimes per diems for doing things. And I'm applying for a couple of residencies, and some of them have got kind of like project requirements. So one that I've applied for is in Tbilisi in Georgia, where you spend a month there, and I'm actually going to try and write a novel in Flash based around Georgian mythology whilst I'm there. So that will be a fun challenge.
Wow, that sounds like a great new thing to do from a writing perspective.
Yeah. I mean, completely different.
Once you get into that, Marina, then it'll be hard to get you. You'll be doing residencies all over the world globe.
Yeah, well, I mean, I haven't been accepted in one yet. So, you know, I don't know how competitive they are, but fingers crossed.
Okay, I'm guessing the next time you're on this podcast that I'll be interviewing you from somewhere exotic around the world.
That would be fabulous. I hope it happens.
Okay, well, Marina, thanks very much. It's been great to have you on the podcast again. And such a lot has happened in the last 2 years, and it's been very interesting to find out about it.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye.